is Run, der Jogging-Cast mit Philipp Jordan und René Kreber.
Hallo, hier ist Fatboys Run, der Lauf-Podcast und heute mit einer ganz besonderen Ausgabe, zwar ohne René, aber dafür habe ich einen Gast aus den USA, der eine unglaublich inspirierende Geschichte zu erzählen hat. Und in dieser Geschichte spielt Laufen auch eine große Rolle, Ernährung spielt eine große Rolle und interessanterweise auch Football. Und let's welcome and switch to English. I have to do this podcast in English to all my German folks who are not that good with English. I'm sorry. Then learn English. And, hey, Josh LaGiorni, is that how you pronounce your name right?
Yeah, that is very close enough.
Very close enough. Josh LaGiorni, welcome to the Fat Boys Run podcast. I wanted to let you tell your story or at least interview a little bit after I heard you on the Rich Roll podcast. And Rich Roll played quite a part in my life, with at least for the last 5 weeks, as the last chapter of his book made me go, at least as an experiment so far, go on a plant-based diet, and I'm liking it so far. I don't have any problems. I'm enjoying it, but it was quite amazing to hear your story. And let's start when you were, I don't know if that's insulting, but it's so way back, when you were the heaviest.
Right.
How heavy were you?
At one point I was, and I'm estimating here because the biggest number I ever actually saw on my scale was 397 pounds. But that was after a month of eating right and working out. My scale that I had at the time wouldn't register any result. It would just say error when I would stand on it. And so I know that subsequent months to that, I had lost probably 20 pounds a month or so. So I would think that I was at least 410 pounds or so at my very heaviest. Is where I started.
For the European listeners, that's above 180 kilograms. So that's
heavy guy.
That's quite a heavy guy, yes.
And I'm also, you know, as was told to me a lot by people who love me, my family, I carried it well, quote unquote, okay. Because I'm a tall guy, and I've always been a big guy, and I've always played football. Football's still a passion of mine. I still love football. I don't play anymore, but I was, that's why I had such a cozy relationship with being so heavy, was my love for the game of football. And I still, in a lot of ways, identified as an American football player, that big guy, you know?
So you weren't insulted at all, because I remember once I was at a cafe at my heaviest. I wasn't as heavy as you were, but I was, right. I was definitely too heavy. I was fat. I said, no, I'm kind of on a diet and I'm trying to lose weight. And there was this girl who just met me. He said, no, come on, this is you. You shouldn't lose weight. It's perfectly, like, it fits you. You're the funny guy with the curly hair, like the Jonah Hill kind of guy. And I felt insulted, because I thought, like, even though you want to make a compliment, I in my inner, somewhere deep inside me, I feel like, no, this is not the real me. Even though it has been here for quite a long time, the real me is way back in childhood when I was skinny.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And I still wrestle with that a lot with people who've known me my whole life as a big guy, I'm a completely different person now physically, obviously. To manifest that physical change, I've also had to change a lot about myself inside, and the way I think and things I believe and these things. I mean, you know, eating only plants is just one of the things that I've made in my life. But yeah, all of these changes have just manifested themselves physically, but physically and mentally, spiritually, I am a different person. And that's a lot for people who've known me for, you know, decades. That's a lot for someone to digest that's known me my whole life, right?
I've posted on the Facebook side of our podcast, I posted this film I found on YouTube yesterday, where you speak over pictures that you show, and you see
right.
the fat you, and you see the skinny you. And I'm imagine, isn't there some situations, haven't there been some situations where you're like coming across some old school buddy who just doesn't recognize you, like not like
yeah.
being nice, but saying like, who the fuck are you?
That's it, dude. That happens all the time. I don't see a lot of my old buddies very much anymore, because I spend so much of my time running, and I enjoy it. That's my new thing. So I've sort of cultivated an entire new crop of people that I hang out with now. And now my leisure time is wrapped around running. But all of my old beer drinking, meat eating, fishing, hunting buddies that I did play football with back in those days, I still love them. They're still my boys. We just don't have as much in common anymore. So physically, we don't spend a lot of time together anymore. They see pictures of me on Facebook and stuff like that, but physically hanging out with each other, we don't. So we went on a fishing trip where all of us got together about I'd say maybe a month or so ago. And literally three of my buddies that I've known since grade school came up to me and introduced themselves to me as if I was a stranger. And
that is so funny.
That happens a lot, though. Yeah, people, if you haven't seen me in 4 years and you walk up to me, you're probably not going to know who I am. You're probably not going to recognize me.
No, definitely. Yeah. That is easy visible in the video I mm-hmm. posted. I mean, if you go from the front of the video, from the beginning to the end, it is two different people that mm-hmm. you see there. But the amazing thing is, and it's such a pure psychological thing, and to me almost surprising thing, is what made you start? Because if I'm not totally mistaken, it has to do with football.
Well, football is how I got big. All right.
Okay.
It's one of the reasons I got big. And because I played a position called tackle, where I was on the line. I was one of the big guys up front that, you know, kind of do the, you know,
piece of the
it
wall.
Looks like wrestling. Right. I'm a piece of the wall. That's exactly. And, so that's what I did. That was my job in the game of football. Then the game of football left my life, but I still identified as a football player. So I was, like I said, really cozy and comfortable with being the big guy. But without that physical activity in my life, I just kept that eating regimen. And so the weight kind of went off the scales. It went crazy, literally off the scales. And I got really heavy and big. But the thing that changed me and wanted to start switching, I've always wanted to lose weight. I have done it several times, at least three times in my life. I've lost about 80 pounds and put it all back on. But it's always been temporary from the get-go. I know now it was temporary from the start, because I would say I need to lose X amount of pounds and I'm going to do this to get to there. And I would do that because I can do it. You can physically force weight off of your body. That is, people do it in America all the time. Well, if you're going on a cruise, you lose 40 pounds and then you come back from the cruise and you put on 50. That's just kind of how it works. So I've done that throughout my life. I've always wanted to be less big. And there was this dichotomy that exists inside of me of identifying as a big guy, however, not liking some of the physical ramifications of being a big fat person who can't fit in booths and needs extra seatbelt material on an airplane and can't put on his socks without seeing stars and almost passing out, or, you know, these very embarrassing parts of being big I didn't like. So I would want to change it, but just but I would, it would never really, really stick. But what happened, I think the last domino, I mean, the last thing to happen that was the first domino in my current story, my current journey, is I had started going back to school, as a 29-year-old man, because I flunked out when I was playing football in college. And so as a 29-year-old guy, I go back to school as a freshman and start all over again as a college freshman. And by 2 years in, I'm starting to realize that I'm starting to learn how to learn. So I'm reading books and long story short, at the senior year of my college education as a non-traditional student, I was already self-conscious because I'm about 10 years older than everyone anyway, and I feel like the old guy in the classroom all the time. But besides that, I'm also at least 150, 200 pounds heavier than everyone. So I knew in my senior year, I was going to have to stand up in front of my classmates in a suit and tie with a tucked-in shirt and make these presentations, these business presentations, because I was a business major. And I was scared shitless about doing that. I was really scared shitless about getting up in front of a classroom full of people, sweating with a tie around my fat neck and my fat hanging over my collar. You know, that bothered me. So in 2011, I joined the gym with my buddy. It just felt, here I was going again. I just wanted to get the weight off of me because I didn't want to be embarrassed for those presentations that I knew were coming in late 2011, right? In the fall. So I knew I was graduating in the fall, and I knew the fall semester I was going to have these presentations for my capstone course. Like this was the coup de grace for the whole degree. And I was trying to mitigate how I felt about myself for that scene, for those very important moments in my college education. So I did that. We started the gym and we started working out. And before graduation, I had lost 60 pounds, which was good. But I've done that before. But the thing that was different this time was I had an education inside of my head, and I had learned how to reach out into texts to find facts, and not only do that, but act on them and be pragmatic and change understanding, how to change behaviors based on facts that you've learned, to get outcomes that you desire. Right. And so my business education taught me that. I learned a lot reading case studies and doing case studies of businesses where a problem is presented, and here's the things that they noticed about the problem through primary research, and here's the things that they changed, and here are the outcomes that were manifested because of said change in knowledge. And I just applied all of those case study things to my very own life and my very own story. And it just happened. It just sort of started to happen. I didn't seek to be a plant-based runner when I started to lose weight. I was just trying to lose weight. That's all I was trying to do. I was trying to lose weight and not be embarrassed about getting in front of a class full of younger people who honestly looked better than me, and in a suit. And I was trying to mitigate that fear a little bit in the beginning. That's what started. You asked the question, what started it? That's what started it. A little bit of vanity, I guess you would say, started, but, right?
There could have been the danger that you just work towards that one event and afterwards go fall back right to back. Usual business. Because I've been there, done that. And right. But how much did I thought the Super Bowl had some influence.
Well, sure, the Super Bowl had a massive. Well, right before the 2000, right before my senior year, all right, which was fall 2011, is when I started actually doing something about it. But in 2010, the New Orleans Saints had won the Super Bowl, All right. I'm a Saints season ticket holder. I didn't know if your audience would know what I'm talking about when I talk about much about American football and the New Orleans Saints.
Most people don't watch it, but at least they know it's a big how big of a deal.
Right. It is
pretty
a massive,
much like the soccer championship World Cup in Europe.
It's a big deal, and it's especially in Louisiana and Texas and across the South. Because we're a bunch of big ex-football player guys. That's who we are, a lot of us. That's a lot of our identity, you know? And so I physically lost my playing days, but I never lost my passion and love for the game of football. So that passion and love just got switched into being in... Because I've always been a New Orleans Saints fan my whole life, but I went through my whole life just accepting that we'll never win a championship. That's just the way things are here. And, you know, what happened in 2010 was we did something that I thought was impossible, which was we won the Super Bowl. And that really changed my idea of what impossible was inside my head, because this major thing had just, that was impossible for my entire life.
I mean, that is so incredible that a football game, one game, it can change lives on a totally different level.
Right. It wasn't just the game. It was more so what our coach did, Sean Payton. After winning that game and experiencing that season firsthand, because I'm a season ticket holder, and I sat in that Superdome when we kicked that, I want to come to tears just talking about it. When we kicked the field goal to go to the Super Bowl against the Vikings, I was just dumbfounded. And then to actually win in the fashion that we dominated in the Super Bowl. We beat the Colts ass. It was great. And the Saints did that. We were the laughing stock of the NFL for decades, you know? And we have a championship. And that blew my mind. And so that really, here comes where I learned how to learn from school, translates over into my weight story, is because the old me would have never picked up Sean Payton's book to read it, to see what coach had to say about how he broke the mold of impossible down here, right? So the old me would have never picked up that book. That old me would have never read a text about how coach put this miracle, quote unquote, together. And so that's what happened in the summer of 2010, was I read Coach Payton's book, and I learned a lot about how he had to shake our complacency down here. Like, so we had come through Katrina, right? So Hurricane Katrina's global news. Everyone knows about how New Orleans and the Mississippi Gulf Coast, especially, was completely devastated by Hurricane Katrina.
Did you live in New Orleans back then already?
No. Well, I didn't live in New Orleans, but I live about 60 miles west of New Orleans, and we had damage from Hurricane Katrina as well. I experienced Hurricane Katrina in my own hometown, but if you know anything about hurricanes, you know that the western side of the hurricane eye is, if there's a best place to be, the western side of the hurricane is the best place to be. The eastern side of the eye wall is the worst place that you want to be. And that's where the Mississippi Gulf Coast was. They got the absolute worst part of what was an historical, devastating hurricane. And they were at the spear tip of the worst part of it, was just east of New Orleans. But New Orleans itself got pounded because it was still in the eye wall, and I think the eye pretty much passed right over New Orleans. It was a devastating hurricane. But where I lived, by the time the storm wrapped around the top of the eye and started, we got that north wind on the west side, we had 100-mile-an-hour wind, but we had hardly any rain at all in Thibodaux from Hurricane Katrina, but it was still a devastating storm for Thibodeau. We had trees down and power was out and all of the things that go with a hurricane, except the flooding. We didn't have the flooding.
Okay.
So Coach had to deal with a lot of people who had been through, a lot of people in the organization who had been through that experience and were sort of complacent with the fact that, hey, the fact that we're still even here as an organization is a win, Coach. We don't need to stretch outside of our comfort zone. We don't need to stretch outside of our norm and do something as preposterous or as chase a championship, right? The fact we get kudos just for having survived.
Yeah.
And Coach changed that. Coach said, fuck that. What we're going to do is we're going to shake all of those excuses as to why things are just the way they are. And what we're going to do is we're going to go on the offense and we're going to attack and we're going to go take a fucking championship. And that made my hair stand up. And I was like, damn. And here I am in my life. Okay. And I take the words from this coach that I, you know, admire. And I'm like, damn it. Here I am in my life. And what have I done? I have gone back to school. I have not accepted the fact that I'm just an uneducated coon ass. I have gone back to school and decided to educate myself. I have physically made that change in my life. And I've gotten my ass to campus and gone to class and made this thing happen. Nobody did it for me. I didn't get gifted it because I had been through something horrendous. It was something that I went on the offense and took was an education. I said, here I am doing that. So I'm proving to myself another impossible that I can get educated. All right. So not only did my Saints win the Super Bowl, but here I am looking at being a junior or looking at being a senior on the way to earning something that I thought never was really going to come to fruition, which is a college degree. And so there's this other big thing looming in my mind at the time that here I'm worried about how fat I am and how bad I'm going to look going into my senior year. Right. And so that's the part that we were missing in our conversation, you and I just now, before this, the February 2011 part where I jumped in and started going to the gym with my buddy. And because rather than just wishing that I wasn't fat anymore, like I used to wish that I had a degree, I used to wish the Saints would win a Super Bowl. And then I could see that being pragmatic, performing your due diligence is a way to make something happen that you want to happen.
Yeah.
And so that happened in the weight loss story in February 2011.
Have you ever reached out to the coach? I mean, have you ever told him your story in a letter or any other way?
Not really, other than I follow him on Twitter and. But no, I haven't. I haven't ever reached out to him.
I bet these are the things that might make him just as happy and proud as winning the Super Bowl. Stuff like that always.
I firmly believe he'll find out one day.
Yeah,
he'll find out one day my story. And I mean, I'm here, and more and more people are knowing about my story because people like you want to hear it and share it, and so. And Rich Roll, my goodness. So my story is sort of mushrooming and growing out. And it's overwhelming at times, honestly, man. It's overwhelming that so many people, want to know about me and, cause it's just me.
But it's an inspiring story and it has more, soul and realness to it than and a show of obese, even though
right.
I think rather have obese as a show running on telly than some hot dog eating contest or something.
Right, son of a.
but how did you come in contact? But what was first there, running or a plant-based diet?
Running. So here's how it happened. So in 2011, like I mentioned, I had lost about 60 pounds, and I got to my my graduation. I got through all of my presentations, my business presentations, in my suit and my tucked in shirt, and actually had compliments from my professors and my classmates who said, "Damn, you look really nice." And they noticed that I had lost weight, and it was very empowering. It felt really good. So by graduation, I had lost 60 pounds, but right before graduation, I had done some research on how to specifically make the body use up fat, right? Because I had gone to all of my old football workout regimen for the current 60 pound weight loss. So I was just in the gym, doing 3 sets of 10, bench press, squats, curls, all of the normal big guy stuff, right? And so I was doing that and getting my protein shakes and doing all of that stuff. But what I wanted to do was I wanted to hone that. I wanted to be more specific, and I want to see, how does the body get rid of fat? How can I do that? And I had read, I don't even remember the article, but it was more probably of just an amalgam of different articles that I had read, where I came to this consensus that long duration, lower intensity cardiovascular activity is going to get your body more into a fat adapted fat burn mode than high intense stuff would. And so I was like, okay. Because what I was doing was I was going to the gym and I would do my 3 sets of 10, and then I would go and do literally maybe 20 seconds on the elliptical machine as hard as I could go. And then I would get back, right? And then I would get back and I would press some more weight and do some more stuff. So, but because I'm an educated person and because I had done all of these case studies for business problems, and I'm just applying that same model, that protocol, to my very own current case study, which was all of this fat on my body that I want gone, right? So I discovered running through that, and I just started going long, slow. I started with just doing like 45 or 50 minutes on the elliptical machine at just a really moderate effort, but I would be drenched with sweat after, and I would be like, okay, I'm on to something here, I'm feeling good. And then I would do elliptical and treadmill working out at the same time. I would just do 5 minutes on the treadmill and then do 40 minutes on the elliptical. And then I would do 10 minutes on the treadmill. And then so it just started morphing into, it was all just inside at first on the treadmill, right?
Yeah, and that's then, the weird part. Right, but right. It's a very American way to approach things, I guess.
Right. I mean, I watched TV while I was running, but I was only going for like 5 or 10 minutes at a time. So in my mind, it didn't make a whole lot of sense to go outside and run for 10 minutes. I didn't, you know, but then I graduated from the treadmill. And I started going outside and, I started reaching out. I was like, you know what? Cause I knew that I got to a point on the treadmill that I knew I could mostly run for a full mile on the treadmill. But what happened was I was still so heavy that the treadmill would start to smell like it was burning up, and it would quit on me. All right.
Okay.
And it would just shut out, boom, because I was still 360-ish pounds. Well, no, about 340 is when I really started to get serious. I was about 340 pounds when I really started to get serious about running. And so then I moved outside and I started running from just, we had, you know, telephone poles, light poles down the street, and I would run. Not very fast. I would just run from one light pole to the next, and then I would walk to the next light pole. Then I would run to the next light pole. And so it was about 0.8 miles to the highway and back from my gym, doing light pole to light pole like that. And so that would be my post-workout cardiovascular regimen. After every time I would lift, I would go and I would do that. And then that slowly graduated to me running a solid mile without stopping. And then that slowly morphed into me getting back to my love of the city of New Orleans via my love of the New Orleans Saints, right? Because I wanted to run this iconic race here in the city called the Crescent City Classic. But it was 6 miles. That was a stretch for me. I'd never, after I got my 1 mile down, which was about the fastest I ever did that mile was about 12 minutes or so, right? And that's what I would do. After I graduated from the telephone pole running, I went to my 1 mile effort after my gym workout every morning. And I was trying to get under 12 minutes, and man, I just couldn't. I'd get 12:30, 12:20, something like that, and I just couldn't. As an aside, I can now, my current 2 mile PR is 12 minutes flat. But so it just puts in perspective how far I've come, you know? So anyhow, I decided, because I love the city of New Orleans so much, and we do spend the weekends here in the city, and as a big fat guy, I would see, because I don't know if you've ever been to New Orleans, but if people, nope. There's just oak line, these live oak line streets, and it's beautifully shaded, big, like St. Charles Avenue and the Garden District and all of these beautiful areas of the city. It's perfect running area, you know? And I would see these people running around my city that I love so much. And I was like, I want to do that too, you know? And the thing that's synonymous with New Orleans running is the Crescent City Classic 10K. It's a global draw. I mean, we're talking about tens of thousands of people that come to the city, descend on New Orleans to run this 10K. And so as I was starting my preparation for graduation, my friend that had joined the gym with me in 2011, it was actually his idea to join the gym.
Was but, he also heavy?
No, not at all. But okay. He's not. Nah. But we had been friends since kindergarten. Literally, we lifelong buddies. And he wasn't heavy. He was just starting to get a little fat, quote unquote, in his own. You know, everything's relative. So yeah. he had put on 15 pounds or so. So he was fat in his mind. Funny story. He was actually fat in kindergarten, and I was a beanpole in kindergarten. He changed, and he became slim not long after kindergarten, whereas I did the exact opposite. So we kind of switched roles. It's kind of a story unto itself there. He's still one of my best friends in my entire life. And, nice. We've been friends forever. But yeah, so we decided together to sign up for the Crescent City Classic. And I started training. We started training together to try to run what seemed insurmountable to me. 6 miles. That's impossible. But here I am. I had already decided that impossible was just the concept. It wasn't reality. And so, fuck it. I'm going for it. And that's what I did. Going into the Crescent City Classic in 2012, which was my very first race ever, I had done a 4 mile run. That was the longest run I had ever done, and that was Jeff, who's my buddy. We had done it together, and Jeff used to actually, because he's a lot smaller than me, a lot fitter than me at the time. He's still smaller than me. He's not fitter than me anymore. But I'm not gonna pick on him too hard. But no, he used to actually walk next to me as I would run. So my pace, you know, like I was telling you, a 12-minute mile was my 1 mile all-out effort. So when we would string out 4 miles, we're talking about a 15-minute mile top speed, right? Yeah. And that's walking pace for most people. So I would walk. I mean, I would jog, and he would walk. And that was my longest training run, was four miles. And I was like, holy shit, how am I going to be able to run 6 miles? Because the 4 miles just crushed me. My nipples were bleeding, and my legs hurt, and I was just completely done. I was starting to cramp. I was just completely done. Well, fast forward to race day in 2012. On race day for the Crescent City Classic, which is my very first race, we had the start line, and we get started, and I soon realized in about mile two, I was like, boy, all of our training runs had been before daylight, right? Because we both work, and so we would get to the gym early, and we would run. We would be done with our running before daylight. Well, Crescent City Classic, I think, started at like 8 a.m. And so, and I'm running 15-minute miles. So 30 or 40 minutes into it, I'm not even halfway done, right? And
sun comes up.
As sun comes up and it's hot and I'm fat. I'm still, because I'm 320 still at this point, right? So, and I'm not an experienced runner. So I have on a cotton shirt with an undershirt because I'm embarrassed of my fat rolls. So I would always wear a shirt underneath my shirt to try to quiet down the jiggliness of my upper body when I would run. Honestly, that I did. So I had a black shirt on that said Free Sean Payton, because by this time Coach Sean Payton had been suspended and there was the whole big bounty situation. So I had a Free Sean Payton shirt on, cargo shorts. I was wearing cargo shorts and running my very first 10K. And so in mile three is all I was done, man. I walked it in, basically. I just walked it in from mile three. And at first, so my time in that race was an hour and 43 minutes. As another aside here to show where I am currently, my current half marathon PR is 1:35.
Wow.
So I can do twice the distance in the same amount of time now, more than twice. Mm-hmm. And but what happened that day, bro, is as I crossed the finish line, I was happy that I had made it the 6 miles. I was. As a 320-pound man, correct. Good job, Josh. The old Josh would have rested on that and would have said, look at what you did. You're 320 pounds, and you just made it through a 6-mile race, right?
Yeah.
And now rest, enjoy yourself. But the other, the newer part of me that was starting to blossom at that point wasn't quite as happy. The newer part of me was like, you son of a bitch. All of that work and all of that effort, and you had people with strollers, moms with strollers. No offense to moms with strollers, because I know some fast ones. But these were not fast moms with strollers finishing before me. And I was like, this, you got more in you than that. That's bullshit, right? And my wife knew immediately that I wasn't happy about my finish. And it was her idea next to say, hey, let's do it again next year. Let's sign up right now. And let's do it again next year in under an hour. Let's just make that our long-term goal, baby. And we did it together as a team. Nice. And that's in the interim is where I started to affect change in my food, right? So I had already adopted a new normal in physical activity by adopting running, getting less into the big I can lift heavy shit. I got less and I started to morph and get away from that mentality and think of myself more as an overall fitness is what I was trying to achieve in health, not necessarily a big ass strong motherfucker. That's what I wanted to be, because that's what I always had thought of myself as a football player, right?
Yeah.
So I was that was already starting to change. I was wanting to be a runner because of New Orleans, because of the Crescent City Classic, and because of a running club that I had started to dabble in running with here called the Louisiana Running Company. All right. That's a running group. After that first Crescent City Classic, the running group came into play. My wife was on board with me. I started adapting my weight routine to making me a better runner, not just a big strong guy. And so I started to morph, and I was willing to make changes according to the facts that I was learning. All right. So I was being a pragmatist about my goals. I was being very pragmatic about what I wanted to get done, what I accepted as fact in my head going forward. And so that in 2013, right?
Yeah.
No, so 2012, following my first effort, so we're still in 2012. I'm losing more weight. I'm getting better with the running thing. I'm starting to reach out. And fast forward to 2013, Crescent City Classic 2013. That's on Easter. All right.
There's two.
Crescent City. It's Easter weekend, right?
Okay.
Right after Easter, there's a thing called Lent in Catholicism, which we are just dominated by the Catholicism religion-wise in New Orleans and in South Louisiana in particular. Right? So after that race, which we did get under an hour, my wife and I ran it together. She could have completely dusted me in the race because she was in great shape and she was ready to go. And it was just my race result was just a matter of me chasing her and not wanting her to beat me too bad. And so we both made it in under an hour. It was 59:56. I still have the time on my tracker on my phone. So 59:56, got it in under an hour, and then Lent starts immediately afterward. And during the months leading up to that race, I read Born to Run, okay?
Oh, yeah, that's a big influence for most people.
I read Born to Run right before that 2013 Crescent City Classic, all right? So I read Born to Run, and then my wife was like, you know what? Let's try giving up all processed food and junk food, stuff like that, for Lent. Because up until this point, I was still eating basically whatever I wanted on the weekends because, in my mind, I worked so hard, I deserve it, right?
Yeah, I've been there, done that.
Right, so she's like, let's do this for Lent, which is 40 days. Let's give up all processed food, and let's see how it goes. So we did that. And in that 40 days of Lent, we were trying to only eat grass-fed beef and organic chicken and these things like that, right? Yeah. And so, but by default, we were winding up by removing all of our processed food from our diet. We were winding up just by default with a lot of vegetables and fruits and plant foods in our diet to make up the calories that we were missing from macaroni and cheese and cookies and shit that we would normally be eating. And so that was like the first domino to fall in me completely changing my relationship with food, right? And in that time is when I read Scott Jurek's book.
Oh yeah,
because I read Born to Run. I learned of Scott Jurek, so I read Eat and Run. Beautiful, beautiful story. And then immediately after I read Scott Jurek's book, now, mind you, I'm still not 100% plant-based at this time. I'm just eating clean, quote-unquote, and I'm feeling amazing. And I'm learning about these people who are awesome runners, and I want to run like them. So I read Scott Jurek's book. I was like, okay, cool. He's a vegan, but I don't go that extreme. I could still keep chicken and fish and bacon in my diet from time to time, and, you know, it's not a problem. And so immediately
your last sentence was eaten up by Skype.
No problem. So I was still eating, at the time I read Scott Jurek's book, I was still just eating clean, quote unquote. I wasn't plant-based, but I was reading his book and understanding that he is a beast. Not just marathoner, but a beast ultra marathoner. And I was like, I was just mystified. And so he had my attention with the plant-based diet. But what happened next was I just went into, because I'm reading these books on my iPad through iBooks, right? So as soon as I'm done with one, I can go right into another one.
That's exactly what I did, by the way. The same books. Born to Run was my first running book. Before the old school one my dad gave me. And then the next one was, I think, there was Dean Karnazes and then
In between, right.
Was my Kindle that advised me those books. And I was like, yeah, give me more of that. It's perfect motivation to keep running.
Exactly. That's exactly what. And so I went into iBooks. And I wanted to know more about these ultra runners, because this is blowing my fucking mind. Like, these dudes are running. Here I am trying to get over the fact. Here I am trying to digest running a 10K, and they're running, you know, over 26.2 miles. Because at the same time, I'm also flirting with the idea of signing up for my first full marathon. Right?
Yeah.
Well, actually, just my first half. That's what I was signing up for, my first half, which would have been in October 2013. So I'm reading these books, and I go, after I finish Scott Jurek's book, I type in ultra, and before I can, the presumptive texting in the search bar throws up, you know, finding ultra.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, okay, let me see what this is about, because I saw Rich Roll's picture on the front. He's like, he's a fit guy. He's obviously going to talk about running in his book. And so I got it. He has nowhere in his, I didn't read a blurb or anything, but I don't think it says anything about being a plant-based runner. I didn't get the book looking for another plant-based runner. I wanted to know more about ultra running. I had almost decided to dismiss the fact that Scott Jurek was vegan, just as like, oh yeah, he's vegan, that's cool, but you don't have to do that, which you don't, I don't think, but anyway, that's a whole other ball of wax.
Yeah.
So I read Rich Roll's book, and lo and behold, boom. He's a drunk, fat guy, cheeseburger loving, pizza loving guy. Reminded me a lot of myself in his partying days. And then he makes the switch. He was a failed, pretty much college athlete like myself. So his story really resonated with me. And when I finished his book, I was like, that's it. Plant-based is the way to go. I'm going all in. And then I read Brendan Brazier's book right after that, because then I was seeking plant-based runners' books. So I read Brendan Brazier's book after that. I had seen Forks Over Knives and Food Matters and Hungry for Change and King Korn and Frankensteer and all of these other documentaries at the same time that I'm reading these books, Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead, all of these other things that are just making me go, boom, 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 boom. Here's a whole bunch of facts you can't ignore, man. And what you gonna do about it? And so I changed. I did it. And I went all in. But granted, I had slowly been changing thing after thing after thing for like, you know, a year and a half, right? And so it was easier for me to jump in and make such a massive change. But that's what happened after Rich's book. Essentially, I was all in, and I had decided to run my very first marathon, which I started training for in 2013. My very first half marathon, which I started training for after the 2013 sub 1 hour Crescent City Classic finish. And so there's a Jazz half marathon in October here in the city. So that's what I started getting ready for. And during my training for that, because I started going on a lot longer runs, getting ready for a half marathon, plus I'm slower, even though a 13-mile run isn't a long run to me anymore, or per se, back then, because I'm running 11-minute pace, 12-minute pace, a 10-mile run is a long run. It takes time, right? So what I would do is I had started listening to Rich Roll's podcast at that point in my life. And it just further drove home the, like, dude, this makes so much sense. But what Rich brought to the party in my brain was a lot of mindset stuff, right? It was just a lot of that that he sums it up so well when he talks about how to unlock and unleash your most authentic self, right?
Yeah.
And a lot, and I talked about this in my last Rich Roll podcast, was I had gone and I'd gotten some therapy around this time as well, because it's not just hard to become a completely different person for the people around you. There's like some inner turmoil that goes on too inside your head when you go from, you lose essentially an entire other person's worth of masks off of your body, and you make these masks, and there's some shit that needs to be cleared up inside your head. So at that same time, I'm also going to therapy and I'm learning a lot about my essence, and I had never had anyone talk to me that way before about trying to understand or trying to answer what is your essence, what is the being that evolved to be you, why is it here, and these like real existential sort of lines of thought that have never been in this coon ass's brain before, and so that really meshed well with what I was hearing in Rich Roll's podcast, right? And about moving energy. And Rich also talks a lot about how he struggles with meditation and how it's a practice and how you know, all of these different things. And it's beautiful. So long story short, about my half marathon effort, was that's when I started listening to Rich Roll's podcast regularly. And then December of 2013, I tweeted a picture of before and after of myself. After I had run a couple of half marathons, and I was feeling really good about myself, how I look, how I'm able to perform and use my body. I feel like I'm molding myself into an athlete because I think I am an athlete, which had to happen first. And I learned that from Rich Roll, right? And so I just tweeted a picture and I said, "Hey, you have no idea how much you've inspired me to get this done, what you see right here in this picture." And that was it. He shared that picture on his Facebook page, and then he emails me. He asked me for my contact info on a message, and he emails me, and he says, "Dude, you just blew up my Facebook page with this before and after." He said, "I've seen before and afters before, but I've never really seen someone go before and after, and their after picture be someone absolutely chasing down athleticism," and to paraphrase. And I was flabbergasted that it was that big of a deal to him, you know. But that's how the first Rich Roll podcast came to be. It's because he's like, "Man, I really think your story would resonate with people who have had similar struggles that you've dealt with throughout your journey. And I would think it would be an asset pretty much to the podcast to have an everyman on the show." And of course, I obliged. I mean, I still couldn't believe that he wanted to interview me. But he did. And then that was a whole other page, because after I had done those first couple halves, I had signed up to do my first full, which would have been in January of 2014. Right. And so we talked about that in my first Rich Roll podcast interview. And that first full marathon, I revisited the way I felt after my very first 10K effort.
How did you do? Describe in a short, how was your first marathon going?
It just completely owned me. It beat my ass.
I had that. By the way, 2014 was also my first marathon. And
awesome.
The last.
And can you? Is it like words fail you to when you try to describe to someone what a marathon feels like in words? You can't do it.
But I had tears in my eyes at the start, and I had tears in my eyes when I knew I would finish. Not on the finish line, but like 1 mile, 2 miles before the finish, I knew, okay, I will make it. Because that's the big question mark. I think everyone that like I don't want to fail. I want to do. I want to say I did a marathon.
I want to. That was the biggest thing, and that's my biggest advice to anybody wanting to go do their first marathon: is forget about time and go get you a marathon finish. Go get you the freaking medal and become a marathoner first. Just go do the damn thing. Because that's what I was wanting. I had a goal time, and I fell almost an hour short of my goal time.
What did you? How long did it take you?
It took me 4 hours and 44 minutes. And I was averaging like a 9:30 pace all the way to about mile 17, and I bonked. I just lost it. I lost it.
My first half was also way, way faster than my second half.
Yeah, and I just lost it. And in mile 23, so my wife ran that one with me, and I left my wife in like mile 8, right? And so about mile 23, I'm walking, and I'm crying, and I'm thinking it might be the end. I might not be able to make it 3 more miles. It sounds absurd, but I was feeling like I was done. And she came by me, and she couldn't stop running because she was scared that she wouldn't be able to get started again.
So she just
came by me, and she said, "Holy shit, baby, you look like crap." And I was like, "Well, thanks. I appreciate it. I really feel like shit." I said, "I'm hurting, baby." And she was like, "Well, take a break or something." She's like, "I can't stop. I'll see you at the finish line." And I was like, "Son of a bitch." So here I was, you know, thinking I was going to try and get a 4-hour marathon in, and that didn't happen. I was well short of that. And I was able to start running again and jogged it out from about mile, say, halfway through mile 24. I was able to jog it on into the finish line. But I had pretty much walked from mile 19 to mile 23. And that just crushed my time. But same thing, like that first 10K, I get to the end of my marathon, and I was very emotional because look how far I've come. I've come from that to this. But then there was that other side of me that said, "You son of a bitch. You know you can do better than that.
But I
you
think
know you didn't prep better."
That is the best thing, because I have the same. Like I finished my first trail ultra marathon 55K like 3 weeks ago, and I was like, okay, that wasn't really fast, but I was happy I did it, and I was hungry for more. And I think that hungry for more is important, because many people run one marathon and then they're like, okay, checked, did that.
Right.
Let's stop. That's exactly that's nonsense.
That is what Rich Roll brought into my psyche was embrace the journey. Forget about the goal, really. Forget about the finish line. Who gives a shit? It's the better person you make yourself in the process. That's where life is created, not at the finish line with the clock, right? And people might mistake, because I am PR centric. I love to work hard and achieve a new goal, achieve a new record for myself. But if it all boils down to what I love the most, it's not the time on the clock or my place on the leaderboard. What is most important to me is the fact that I'm a runner and I'm a decent one.
Yeah.
And I enjoy that, right? And I enjoy being that. I enjoy embodying that. I enjoy convincing other people to be that with me. Because I think it is innately human. I think it is part of being a human being, is bipedal locomotion and eating plants. And I think if you can adopt that and just get in line with what nature intended, you'll finally get to that essence that my a therapist was talking about. It has nothing to do with the car you're driving in the house or the it has nothing to do with any of these things that we have so much importance on today. It has everything to do with that germ of who you are deep down inside of you. And essentially, all of us humans are running plant eaters. And the sooner we can adopt that, I think the sooner we can get really close to that default happiness and homeostasis. And that's why I'm so passionate about plants and running. And I'm so vocal about it and so willing to share my passion about it. And I think just by accident, I don't mean to be, but I think it's contagious. And I think other people like what I have to say about it, and that just drives me even more. It inspires me when people say I inspire them. So it's like this perpetual inspiration loop that makes me happy. It really does. It makes me happy. But that first, back to what you were saying, that first marathon was 4 hours and 44 minutes.
What was your personal best? What have you achieved in the meantime? Even though I'm not a time guy, by the way.
Right, I don't care. But time is important to me because that's part of running. Right?
Yeah, and it's for your personal goals.
The end all be all to my running existence. But yes, they are very important to me, and I'm very proud of what I've been able to achieve in the year after my first marathon, which was just 2014. We in 2015 right now. Right? So 4:44 in my first marathon, which was February 2014. Then I ran an event called Hotter Than Hell, which was a marathon just in a 2-mile loop here in Audubon Park.
Oh my God.
All right, so I did that one in 4 hours and 19 minutes and 50 seconds.
Wasn't that terrible? Because I'm asking because I'm planning this weekend to run a marathon with 4 rounds.
Yeah.
Of a little bit more than 10K, and everybody tells me don't do that, don't do that. I had a marathon with 2 loops, but 4 they say after the third one you don't want to go. But 2-mile loops.
It's rough, bro. Yeah, it's rough. But here's the thing. Is it's supposed to be rough, and so that's like there's a certain part of being a runner that's like masochistic in a lot of ways, and so we kind of seek pain in some ways, and plus now that I'm training for ultras, the more suffering you can bring to your run, that sounds so crazy, but the more suffering you can bring to your run, the better prepared you'll be for race day, I think. But yeah, it did, to answer your question, yeah, it sucked running in a 2-mile loop for a marathon, which I did that same 2-mile loop, by the way, this past weekend, but I did it 20 times. So I did I ran 40 miles on that same 2-mile track this past weekend, this past Saturday. Yeah. So my second marathon was 4:19:50. And then my third marathon was New York City Marathon. So that was just this past November. And I ran New York City in 3 hours and 47 minutes. And then back to the New Orleans Rock and Roll, which was the 12, which was the same as this, the first marathon, right? So here I am a full calendar year after my first marathon, running the exact same marathon. And I ran that marathon in 3:34.
Wow.
So I took 1 hour and 10 minutes off of my marathon time in 12 months.
That is incredible.
I am proud of those things. I enjoy that. I enjoy having done that. But the person that I think that I've created along the way is
hungry for more
precious to me. Right. It's more hungry for more, but that person that I've created inside myself is more precious to me than any of those PRs, any of those race times.
Yeah, I totally
agree. So after that, after this last marathon, I went right into the ultra distance, you know? So I went from my last marathon at 3:34 was in January. And then on February 14th, which is Valentine's Day, I was running a 50K on the beach in Destin, Florida. Wow. and which was basically a 16 15 and a half mile out and back route along the beach in the sand on the beach in Destin, Florida. Beautiful, beautiful run. But it was brutal. It was brutal.
I was, by the way, my first ultra, I wanted to run ultra. I watched Unbreakable. I don't know. Have you seen that movie?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you have to see. You have to see that one. That totally made me go crazy for trail running.
Yeah.
Ultras and trail running. But
trail running too is new for me that I'm getting into, right?
Mm-hmm. I wanted to go above a marathon distance. So I signed in quite a close call like 2 weeks prior because someone told me, hey, there's a nice trail run, 55K. And I was like, okay, I'll sign in. And what I didn't... I was just thinking, yeah, come on, you can cover 55K. You can cover that. That's not such a longer distance than a marathon. But what I totally...
The trail was going up and down, and we were
going on like these horse paths and sand and everything and I was like, oh my god, after 10k I felt like, you know, that zone after 30k when you're in a marathon when your legs hurt and you think like, shit, I have like 10k to go to finish that, and you think like, shit, it hurts, it's not nice. And I had that after 10K, so I know what you're talking about when you talk about running on the beach. Hell.
I mean, it's just right. And that's a whole nother thing that I'm learning is this running on natural surfaces, on trails and stuff, and, you know, the micro decisions you have to make with every single step where so you don't twist your ankle and you don't step on that fucking root and you don't trip over that puddle and you... That, you know, that's a lot of brain calories you're burning. So along with it being in a more difficult run, I think your calorie burn goes up. And it's a completely different animal for a roadside to jump into running ultras on a trail. I totally recognize that. And I completely submit and bow to the guys who are more experienced than I in that field, because I know some of them and they are fucking animals, brother. They are beasts.
Yes, they
are beasts.
I don't know if you follow Killian Hornet, the Spanish guy.
I don't
downhill running, talking about microsecond decisions, this is like the microsecond of a microsecond.
That's exactly
incredible.
Right.
And uh-huh. you really, if you take one thing home from this podcast, because I have a lot to take home from you, is go buy the Unbreakable DVD. This is like 10 books at once.
I will.
It is such a boost and what to me, I don't know if you have the same thing, because you come from I started with the 10k too, and I ran marathons like three prior to my ultra trail. Is I like the audience, but I don't know how it's with you, but after like a certain amount of kilometers, it's almost annoying when people come screaming at you, and I feel like I have to be polite and react or smile back. And when with a trail or a run in nature, I think nature is such a better audience. It can give you such a boost,
and
you don't have to smile back. Nature was my better audience in the trail run.
Right, you can just let go and be that evolved creature, that evolved distance running creature that we are. And you don't have to put on the facade of going, oh, high-fiving people like in marathons, which is all that's great. I love that stuff, you know. But just like you were saying, when you get done and you're tired and you get to that special place where you're just not quitting, that's all you're doing right now is I'm just not quitting. And that's what ultra running to me. I'm a newbie. I've only done it a couple of times. But to me, that's what's rising to the top as the most important part of becoming an ultra runner, is learning how to not fucking quit no matter what. Right. And that is a whole nother ball game. That's not the same thing as trying to hold a 750 pace for 22 miles. That's not the, they don't even as hard as it is to hold a 750 pace for 22 miles, which is what we did in my last marathon. I was able to hold a set where we were able to stay at a sub 8 minute pace all the way to mile 22. And then we turned and started coming against the wind from 23, 24, 25. And so I just fell off very hard towards the end of that marathon. The last 4 miles was brutal to me. But yes, it was hard to run a 750 pace, but a lot of ways I'm more comfortable there. I'm not worrying about every single step I'm taking. I'm in a high cadence. I'm clicking out miles. Whereas in an ultra, you know, you're like, shit, it took me 30 minutes to get through 3 miles just now, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm going to be out here doing this shit all day long. And I'm not used to that. I'm used to hitting the road, chewing up mileage, and then high fives. We done. And an ultra event is not about that. An ultra event is you better get used to being out there for 6, 8, 10, 12 hours. It's almost like a camping trip on your feet, kind of. Like it's like a little micro camping trip that you – it's a perpetually moving camping trip or something, because you got to have all the food and the water and all of the things that you need kind of on a camping trip. But you just go and you run for 10 or 12 hours. And that's a whole different ballgame. It's a whole different ballgame. And that's what I'm training for now. I signed up for 100K.
Woo!
In October. Yeah.
Woo!
Yep.
Which one?
It's a brand new one, and it's called the Children of the Cane, because we're a big sugarcane producing area here. So we have lots of sugarcane fields in South Louisiana, all right? And so this is going to be a Children of the Cane 100K, 100, it's a 50K, 100K, 100 mile event. And I think there's a 50 mile or two. And we just run through Cane Field.
Okay, but have you covered 50 miles yet, or you just?
I've done 40 twice, 50K. I've done a 50K race, and I've run 40 miles twice. And I'll probably do a 50 miler
before that, yeah.
Before then, right. And so it's not going to be easy. It's going to be hard. I'll be completely spent.
Nobody said it would be easy.
No, that's exactly right. It's going to be everything you got in your body, which is why I'm, you know, again, as I was waiting for you to Skype me just now, I'm watching YouTube videos by Sage Cannaday about different, you know, fueling techniques and how his approach is during his training and his opinion on fat adaptation versus high carb, blah, 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 blah. And so I'm trying to learn all of these different things and try to make sure that I don't hamstring myself accidentally in any way through just ignorance. And
by the way,
but it's fun.
Have you had any in your journey so far, your running journey, did you have any injuries yet?
No.
Oh, okay. That's because that's one big thing that that is just as hard, I guess, as finishing or not quitting, is to be put to stay put for like a month or something and not being able to work out. I hope you don't have to experience that. I haven't really experienced it. I just had like a few weeks where I couldn't run.
I'm very careful. The worst I've done is I strained a calf. Like I just had like a Achilles calf problem on my left leg, and now I know what I did wrong. I ran to a race, I'm 4 miles away. I ran to a race, and then I signed up for the race, and I waited around for about 40 minutes, and then I started the race, which was a 2 mile race, so it was a fast race. I mean, it was a 4 mile race, so it was a fast race. And rather than take it easy like I should have done, by the end of mile one, I was running a 650 pace, which I should have never done that. But I got into race mode, and I pulled up about 1¾ miles. I had to pull up and start walking so I didn't hurt myself, because I could tell that something was
okay. Hello?
Was going on with my calf, and I just rested it and just pulled back. But that was right after a 40-mile run I had done. So I did a 40-mile run on a Sunday previous, and this was a Sunday. So I was exactly a week out from a 40-mile run, and I was in mile six of a run that day, trying to hammer out a 6:50, 6:30 pace while I had just cooled off too much, and it was just a dumb thing to do. But as far as like serious, like, hey, go to the doctor, you have to stop. I haven't had anything. Knock on wood.
Knock on wood, indeed.
Yeah.
Hey, it was really inspiring. I hope I at least will come back to you whenever you finish that 100K, and
maybe
you can. And whenever you're in Europe. Feel welcome. I have a guest room here, and there's a lot of nice runs. Have you traveled running? Not really, as far as I
not really. My only travel race really was the Destin 50K, which is not. That's about a 9-hour drive for me. And then I went. And then during my New York training, I drove up to Northern Alabama to race a half marathon, which was about an 8-9 hour drive, because I wanted. Because it was part of my training plan. I was supposed to race a half marathon, but I wanted to do it in the hills because we don't have hills where I live. So I drove up to Northern Alabama and I raced that half marathon. I wound up running like a 1:36 in the hills, and I was like fifth overall in that half marathon. Yeah, it was pretty cool. That was an unexpected day for me. But yeah, that's the only time I've really traveled and raced. But it's something that I would,
Hello?
That intrigues me. I think I would like to do that once I become, I'm still a newbie runner. I'm still learning, you know, very fresh. I just ran my first, you know, so it's crazy, but I'm enjoying the hell out of it.
My father, who was a big inspiration, by the way, he ran 100 marathons. And he traveled them. He traveled a lot. He went like from Moscow to New York, Disney World, Europe.
Right.
So you can make combined vacation trips to Europe or other continents with the runs, which will might be the next level. So
that might be the next thing.
Feel invited, and thank you very much. And I hope we see you. Again, and go buy that Unbreakable Western States 100 DVD. It's incredible.
You damn Skippy. I'm going to do that today.
Okay. Hey, have a nice one. Bye.
Bye-bye.